Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. As the youngest MP in New Zealand's history, just 23 when she entered Parliament under the fearsome Robert Muldoon, it's fair to assume Marilyn Waring has dealt with her share of discrimination over the years, so it's fitting that her latest project is editing a collection of stories of Solomon Islands women who have triumphed over discrimination. Marilyn Waring joins us now. Marilyn, thank you very much for coming in. Now, your latest offering, as we can call that, you've edited Being the First, Stories of Solomon Islands Women. That must have been a fascinating project, was it?
Yeah, well, I've been working for the Regional Assistance Mission, Ramsay, in the Solomon Islands for the last 3 years in their what they call the Machinery of Government program. And I've been going to the Solomons since 1978, so I have a fairly good idea when I go in, you know, whether things are up or down, as it were. And when I first started on this assignment 3 years ago, it was pretty grim. Loads of women across the sector not talking to each other, still a lot of fear, still a lot of people who'd been traumatised in the Troubles, a lot of rape, a lot of battery. It's a very violent country for women as well. So you go in and you always have this terms of reference that looks like, you know, you're travelling into a cute little New Zealand town where everything works. And it's never like that. So when you've got some experience in development like I have, you learn to look at the language and then to use it in a way that's really constructive. So we were supposed to mentor senior women in the public service. And, you know, you could have meetings for the next 3 years and really nothing much would change. And I've also worked a lot on development projects. You leave and you think, good grief, did I leave anything there at all? So I have this fantastic counterpart, a Solomon Islands woman, Alice Pollard. She did her doctorate on women in leadership at Victoria University here. Very special woman. And so we were chatting about, you know, what was feasible and what wasn't. And during this chat, I found out there had never been a book written on Solomon Islands women, certainly not by Solomon Islands women. You know, there are tourism books. There are books about the great male leaders. There are, you know, geographic kind of books and warring Melanesia sort of books, but nothing.
Is that surprising in a country where, for example, women got the vote in 1967? For example, I mean, is it that, you know, that while the rest of the world was perhaps going through the, you know, the women's lib movement, obviously New Zealand had suffrage a lot earlier than that. This is only a very recent thing that they've actually even been looking at issues of gender and feminism and those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. There have, of course, been, you know, books about the big men. and there's been, you know, a revision of school curricula, even at secondary school. But then you begin to realise there couldn't be anything in there because nothing's recorded. So Alice and I proposed to, I've been working with the Australians on this, so we proposed to the Australians that what we'd do is we'd do life history interviews of all the women who had got to the top anywhere at all. The only woman who's ever been a member of parliament, the women who have become permanent secretaries of government agencies, what we'd call chief executives, the clerk of the house, the woman who was first a public service commissioner, etc., and get them to tell their stories. So they would tell those in Pidgin, and then the voice file would be sent to this extraordinary young woman, Cynthia Wickham, who actually is a graduate in Marine. And she was working on a tuna boat out in the middle of the Pacific. But she was the best person we could find to transcribe the Pidgin interviews. And it's not an agreed, Solomon's Pidgin isn't an agreed transcribable language, you know. And so she'd transcribe it, then she'd do a first translation into English, and then she'd send it to me in Auckland, and then I'd start to edit it. And then it would go back to Honiara. So that was the way the book got made. But we wanted to really retain the storytelling tone and approach of the book so that when women read it, they could hear stories as opposed to it being a third-person, dispassionate, you know, reported sort of a past tense exercise.
What struck me about reading the book is that you are hearing these stories of discrimination and, you know, and wrongful kind of treatment. Yet on the other hand, traditionally Solomon Islands women got respect and sort of status from their role as, you know, being in charge of, you know, the sort of domestic kind of duties. And, you know, that I didn't know that they were the people who paddled the canoes, for example. So it sort of seems quite at odds with that.
Well, that's you had a lot of things in that question. we're talking about women from a number of cultures and a number of ethnicities and a number of different language groups. You know, Solomon's is a big spread there, sort of across the equator and in the mid-Pacific. We're talking about a group of people where previously there were matrilineal lines, and then along comes big colonising Old Testament Christianity and kind of wipes out so many of women's claims, whether it's to land, whether it's to security of their own body, whatever these things happen to be. The church is huge in the Solomons, and there's a really distinct difference between those who are Old Testament churches, which is, you know, beat your women and children and keep them in order, and you get permission to do that every Sunday, or the New Testament ones, which is the loving, forgiving God, which unfortunately still seems to me to be in the minority. So there's a complex overlay. What I found extraordinary about these stories as I was editing them was, first of all, the courage of these women to tell them out loud, because there are a number of things in some of these stories, you know, you're kind of taking in a deep breath, really, thinking, oh, wow, when the partner reads that sort of thing. So first of all, it's a lot of courage. Secondly, nearly all of them speak about how helpful Christianity is and has been to them. And they speak about that, especially when they're talking about how do they live with themselves because of the corruption and nepotism and the things that they're asked to do as public servants that they know are against the law. So there's a lot of relationship there around Christianity that they talk about. And it's very, very subtle. But, you know, for me to hold this, the first book ever, in my hands and to know that words like rape, sexual harassment, battery, discrimination, all of these words, somehow or other, every one of these words has got into this book. And when it's the first book ever and it's that honest, I think that's pretty extraordinary.
Is the import? I mean, at the same time, a couple of the stories, at least one of the stories that I read, the discrimination was much more bureaucratic. It was about different pay grades and things like that. You know, a really sort of almost prosaic story of discrimination.
Yeah, that woman Nancy is now the deputy secretary of the public service ministry. So that's quite a good one. That's the one being held on grade 5 for 11 years,
yeah,
and being in charge of the whole payroll for the Ministry of Works. Yeah.
So is the importance of this book as much as the stories themselves as the maybe a cathartic nature or the process or just the very existence of the book, do you think?
Well, the existence of the book is just so important. You know, as I said right at the beginning, you go and do a lot of development agency work and you wonder if anything's there. Well, no one can take this book away, you know, and we learned as we were putting the book together, we already learned how much is missing. There was a woman called Lily Poznanski, obviously that's her married name, but before women even had the suffrage and when there was the Transitional Legislative Council, Lily stood for the central Honiara seat and won it and was in that legislative council for the next 3 to 4 years. We know that she did a postgraduate degree at, I think, Carleton University in Canada. We know that she came to Queen Victoria School in Auckland, New Zealand. And we know that she had a teaching qualification. We could find more about Lily from Auckland and from Ottawa than we could in the Solomon Islands. She's hidden from history. We couldn't find enough to put this woman in this book. And so one of the most important things is that, you know, we kind of overcome that now. And also the way we did it, every skill has been left in the Solomon Islands. They could do book number two tomorrow and they would not need me at all. So every particular capacity that you need to publish a book about women now lies there, you know, as long as they can find the resources to do it.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for coming. And we were going to talk about you as well, but we haven't really got time now. So Isn't that convenient? Very convenient, Marilyn Waring. Good to know you're still around and after seeing you on the TV this week that you haven't been consigned to history. Being the First is out now, and it's a very interesting book, particularly if, like me, you've spent all of 6 hours in the Solomon Islands, nowhere near enough time. Thanks for coming in.
Okay, thanks.
That was Marilyn Waring. Coming up after the break, we meet the cast of Avenue Q and find out why everybody is a little bit racist.